The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. We have broken yet another record that we wouldn't want to have broken in this pandemic, which is that 2020 saw the most excess deaths in this country since the Second World War. There were close to 697,000 deaths in the UK in 2020, which is nearly 91,000 more than would have been expected based on the average of the previous 5 years. So this is one of the worst death rates since the 2000s and the highest excess deaths since World War II. James, this is a pretty miserable milestone to reach, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's a reminder of how bad this pandemic has been and quite how many lives it has taken before their time. And I think the question now is, how fast in 2021 can this cycle where cases rise, hospitalizations rise, death rise, in almost in a mechanical progress, how quickly can that be broken? Because yes, there have been improvements on treatment, but they haven't radically cut your risk of death if you end up in hospital compared to where we were at the beginning of the pandemic. The situation is better, but still bad. And so I think the question is whether the vaccination program really can succeed in breaking this link between cases and deaths. I also think it's going to cause more questions about how the pandemic was handled. A large number of these deaths took place in care homes. Could more have been done to prevent that at the beginning? And I think if his second wave, whichever term you used to use for it, if that bites again in care homes, I think people will ask questions like, you know, for example, German care homes did better in the first wave. They moved their staff onto site residentially. That still hasn't really been done in the UK as we face this third wave. So there is a risk that this community transmission that is going on out there leads to this disease coming into care homes. So I think one other thing it means is that it is completely and utterly inevitable, but quite right too, but there should be a proper public inquiry into what has happened. You cannot have the worst year for excess deaths since World War II and not have a detailed look at what happened, what the state could have done better, what decisions the government made, and were they the right decisions taken at the right time. I mean, all of that will need to be looked at by a public inquiry.
And Katie, it's quite clear that things are going to get worse over the next few weeks. How have ministers and government officials been preparing us for that?
Well, I think it's interesting in terms of the government messaging, because I think, as you've touched on, they've got two stories to tell. You have the vaccine story, which is very positive, and they're trying to show that we are leading. Every time you hear a minister talking about it, they're very keen to say, we have done XX number of vaccines, and that's more than, you know, the rest of Europe put together, to make that comparison. But then on the other side, and I think this is where people wonder if the first is undermining the second, you have the story about NHS preparedness, about capacity, and about how restrictions might have to get tighter. I mean, I think most people can separate the two, but I think there is a question when you're trying to say to people, this is a really serious illness, and look, we're reaching a point where every time you leave the house, we're telling you that's putting someone's life at danger. How you present that while also trying to cheer the country up, I think maybe it's one of those ones where actually the cheer needs to come a bit later. And in terms of the NHS preparedness and where we are, I still think, even though there's a little bit of promising data in terms of London that rates are now going the other way, there's still the sense that this is going to get worse before it gets better. You hearing about the effect of that Christmas relaxation, if you look at what various medical journals have been saying, or NHS staff, they don't think this is the peak. They think that you are going to increase on that. And sadly, when we're talking about the World War II comparison earlier, I think there's also a sense we're going to get some nasty milestones still to come, such as, you know, potentially 100,000 deaths from this. And that is the trajectory we're on before we get to what will hopefully not, you know, be in the medium term, a much brighter story to suggest that actually this is, when we're talking about breaking that pattern, there is a very persuasive argument and a logical argument that we are not going to be in this pattern forever, that actually by the second half of the year that will hopefully have been broken for good, but we're nowhere near that yet.
And another aspect of this pandemic has been the way in which disadvantaged children have had an even worse time as a result of the restrictions and school closures than they usually would. And it seems that the government's way of dealing with some of the fallout from this, including ensuring that children have meals to eat when they're at home, also hasn't been working, James. There was several mothers who've posted pictures of food that was sent to them that was supposed to cover them school meals that their children weren't having. And it's pretty inadequate, isn't it?
Yes, it is clearly inadequate. The food is meant to be equivalent to £30 in value. I think looking at that food, unless you were shopping in Harrods Food Hall, it's hard to see how that amount of food could cost you £30. And so clearly something is going wrong at some point in the system. This government has got into terrible trouble on preschool meals already about having to extend them over the holidays and the like. But I think the question now is, why are some people receiving these packages that clearly contain food that is nowhere near £30 in value? And then I think the other question that is going to come is, you know, clearly something is going wrong in terms of what track is being kept on the contractors who are doing this, and whether they are providing value for money in their services. You had the government today saying that, you know, these food packages are unacceptable, that there'll be words had with the supplier by the children's minister. But I still think it is illustrative of this problem, which is, are you ensuring that these kids who are having to homeschool are getting kind of adequate, nutritious food?
And finally, Katie, Boris Johnson may have been trying to scare the public about the perilous moment that the UK is in terms of the pandemic, and he and ministers may be discussing tightening restrictions, but is he following the restrictions himself? Please tell us the latest on the Prime Minister's cycling trip.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement, at least in Westminster. I think not everyone is convinced of the seriousness of this story, but a lot of interest definitely in Boris Johnson's cycle ride over the weekend, spotted by an eagle-eyed Evening Standard journalist in the Olympic Park, which we've now seen in multiple papers, is 7 miles from Downing Street. And the question is, did Boris Johnson cycle there all the way from Downing Street? Was he driven there and then cycled around the park? There's been no confirmation from Downing Street on either. They're quite reluctant to talk about it. In fact, I think the very part of the reason we're talking about it on today's podcast is, in a way, it's just been dragged on so slowly because they were so reluctant to engage that perhaps it became bigger than it was. But ultimately, there's not been a clarification. And I think the reason this is of interest is not because of he's done his daily exercise. It's because when we're reading quite regularly, and particularly in the case of those two women who drove 5 miles to go on a walk and then got fined, partly apparently because they were holding tea, but they got fined for going on a walk, those fines have now been rescinded. But there's definitely a sense that there are really strict rules about what you can and can't do in exercise. So 7 miles when there are parks nearer has been raised as a question. Is it a problem for the Prime Minister? Well, I think Cressida Dick has come out for him this morning saying he has not broken the rules. And I think that no one really is suggesting he has at this point. But I do think that if this is enforcement week, as the government wants it to be, and they want to talk about how we need tighter rules in terms of, you know, potentially who we can meet when we're outside and so forth, it's fine that he did this, so long as the government doesn't take the stance, which occasionally in terms of some councils they've appeared to, that you couldn't go 4 miles in a car to then go on a walk or go somewhere like that. And I think the reason that this has grated a few people is because there has a bit like mixed messaging, but also just a difference in terms of how people have been sanctioned depending on where they were in the country. Cressida Dick this morning saying actually perhaps we should define what local is, because there is currently no definition. But I think now, to be honest, where they should define local as anything below 7 miles, I think that might grate.
Yeah, I think this also shows the point about, are people breaking the rules, or do people have a reasonable interpretation of them? I thought, you know, Boris Johnson seems to have fallen into that trick that lots of people do, which is he goes to a park and then is shocked and appalled to see lots of other people have had the same thing and gone to the park. We're told that he told the cabinet that lots of people had gone to the park. Well, yes, and so did he. And I think this is the point, which is, it's clearly important for people's physical and mental health, that people keep exercising, keep going outdoors. Isabel, you've written a very good book about the importance of this. But I think the point is that people have a reasonable view that they can take their exercise locally without doing their exercise from their front door back to their front door. If the government thinks that everyone should only exercise from their front door back to their front door, then they should say that explicitly rather than talking in this very vague term about exercising locally. Because the question of what is local means different things in different places. There are some parts of the country where people would think that it was clear that somewhere which was 7 miles away was local. In other bits of the country, people would be more sceptical of that claim. If the government want to kind of let it be known that they want the public to kind of follow the rules more closely, they need to make these rules a little bit clearer, because I think at the moment there is some uncertainty about what is allowed and what isn't allowed, hence the fact that we're having this discussion right now.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie, and thank you for listening.